Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast, where our motto is EDH, community, now and always. Again, before we get started, I'd like to give a huge shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. Well, it's official. I've finally come back from my break and am ready to provide y'all with some awesome new fresh MTG in Quarantine podcast content. And I was really struggling for the last couple of weeks trying to think of some new episode ideas. I had other stuff going on in my life, and I was also really struggling to find something that really kind of resonated with me. And ultimately, just a couple of days ago, I don't remember what I was looking for. I remembered that I had had this idea rattling around in my brain for my series, The Planeswalkers, or the series that used to be known as White in MTG is Good, actually. The series that I used to have good friends Coach Jero and Mono White Border and Mono White Guy on just to talk about all things Mono White in Magic the Gathering. And I had this idea rattling around my head for a while, never got around to doing that with the group, but I think I will do that now. And it's a very interesting topic and something I think I might actually be able to get 5 episodes out of. So we'll just see how that is. So therefore, sit back and relax as I tell you about my very in-depth, my very definitive in-depth look at all non-basic lands that produce white mana, specifically white mana. So obviously white, I love talking about white. White is probably my favorite color in MTG for so many reasons that I've already discussed on this podcast. But really, when I look at all the non-basic lands that produce white mana in their text box, I honestly think that out of the 5 colors, and I'm really thinking about doing one of these episodes for all 5 colors, so definitely stay tuned if I do that. What I really enjoy about these white lands, the white-producing lands, is that they just have so many interesting, different, funky abilities on them. Just some things that when they enter the battlefield, they do something, or they just have a nice activated ability, or they just have some funky other thing going on there. I just want to talk about everything for y'all for, next 20, 30 minutes, kind of just giving my take on what I think about all these different lands. So before I get started, I'm going to provide a few ground rules here. I'm only going to talk about the lands that produce colored mana, so produce a white mana when they are tapped. Obviously, there are a lot of lands that produce colorless mana, the utility lands that then have a white activated ability. I'm not going to talk about those. I might talk about them, maybe at the end of the episode, kind of an honorable mention thing, but I'm specifically going to just talk about non-basic lands that produce a white mana when you tap them. And I also have Scryfall up, so if you're just in, just put Scryfall in. It's a very, very simple search to be able to get this term. So if you want to just follow along, go ahead, and I will get started. I'm going to go in alphabetical order here, just because that's the way it shows on Scryfall when you first open it. And yeah, let's get started. So there's 44 cards in my Scryfall search. Obviously, not all of them are going to fit in here, so we're going to talk about, 30, maybe? Anyway, so I'm going to start with Abandoned Outpost. It's a land. Abandoned Outpost comes into play tapped. You tap to add white to your mana pool, and you can tap it and sacrifice it to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Obviously, since we're talking about white specifically, I don't know necessarily if this is the most useful effect. It's kind of the same effect you have on Gemstone Mine a little bit. Or maybe crystal. Actually, no. It's more of a crystal vein effect. Sorry, where you can tap it and you can sacrifice it to be able to get some extra mana out of it. The interesting thing here is you get the one mana of any color to your mana pool. So if you're running, again, I love Boros, so I love red white decks. So I could technically sacrifice this to create a red mana. But I don't know necessarily why I'd want to do that. I guess in a pinch it works out great. But it's an interesting land, especially if you're trying to sacrifice lands and you need a mana of any color. And yeah, it's just really interesting. Not much else to say about that. The next one is Ancient Den. This was included in the cycle of the artifact lands that came out back in Meriden in, 2004. And It's been reprinted a number of times. Very useful card. Banned in Modern for good reason. Thank you, Affinity. Anyway, again, it's just an artifact. You tap it to add a white mana. And again, what's great about this is it counts towards Affinity. It counts towards the number of artifacts you control on the battlefield. The thing, though, is that you have to kind of be careful about artifact destruction. Is that if someone Vandal Blasts you, or even just, you know, a Nature's Claim, they could blow up your Ancient Den, then you're down to land. So kind of have to be careful with these. You have to be very careful regarding artifacts versus non-land permanents. Obviously, it is a land, so it gets around the non-land permanent bit, but if it's artifact destruction, it will be destroyed. So yeah, you kind of have to be careful with these cards. The next one is Castle Ardenvale. I actually did open this one back, what was this, Eldraine? Yeah. Eldraine, it was one of the rare lands. I think it was in my pre-release kit that I had this. Anyway, Castle Ardenvale is a rare land from Throne of Eldraine originally, and it says Castle Ardenvale enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a plane. So if you're running mono-white, this will pretty much always come into play untapped, ready to be used. It has the tap ability to be able to add a white mana, but it's also got a really sweet activated ability. Costing two white-white, and you tap it, and you can create a 1/1 white human creature token. I'm a huge token guy. I love mono-white tokens. I love white-slash-other-color tokens lists. I just love tokens. And the ability to be able to pay 5 mana at instant speed to be able to create a 1-1, while it does sound kind of expensive, there's really no downside to this. Honestly, what's nice about Castle Ardenvale is, yes, you could play a Plains. Yes, this card could come in tapped early in the game. But if you're playing this turn 3, turn 4, especially in a mono-white deck, you're probably going to have a Plains out there already. It's basically a functional Plains, but with some interesting little upside, especially if you have some sort of token synergy. That's all I can really say on this one, but I really like this card because it provides you a really sweet ability stapled right to the card, and it comes in untapped most of the time, especially if you're playing one or two color decks. And I'm really going to keep harping on just the fact that I just love the activated abilities on a lot of these white lands. I feel like, I keep repeating myself, but I just really love what these white lands are able to do outside of just tapping for white mana. I really do think, and again, don't quote me on this, but I really do think that these white-producing lands are probably the most interesting and diverse bunch of cards that fit under this criteria out of any of the five colors in Magic the Gathering. Obviously, the other colors have some interesting things too, and I will get to those if I do the full cycle of these, but I'm just going to say now, I think what mono-white, or the white-producing non-basic lands, have the most variety out of any of the five colors. Just because they have so many things to play with. People think that white is really boring. And I say no. White has a lot of really cool abilities that people are sleeping on. That was the whole point of the Planeswalker series, and that's the whole point of what I'm basically geeking out here today in this very, very definitive, unofficial, but very official to me anyway, look at these lands. So I'm going to continue here now. The next one was a card out of Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. This is Cave of the Frost Dragon. So it's got another one of those comes in tapped, untapped clauses where if you control two or more other lands, again, that's other lands, period, Cave of the Frost Dragon enters the battlefield tapped. So this is kind of looking the other way from Castle Ardenvale, where unless you're playing this on turn one or turn two, it's probably going to come in tapped. So you kind of have to be careful with this card. Could be a dead draw later on in the game if you're playing, especially a two-colored deck. But if you're playing... it's got some interesting utility. So let's see what else it also does. So obviously tapped to add a white mana, but it's got an activated ability costing 4 and a white, and it reads, Cave of the Frost Dragon becomes a 3/4 white dragon creature with flying until end of turn. It's still a land. Well, that's really nice. White loves a lot of flying creatures, and being able to get a 3/4 dragon creature with flying until end of turn for 5 mana, I mean, again, that's a huge mana investment. Especially since you also have to have Cave the Frost Dragon, you know, untapped to be able to do anything. So let's just say that's 6 mana you have to save for this. A lot of people are going to say, you know, 6 mana, that's way too much. But again, I may not necessarily have a place for this right now, but I can definitely see a lot of utility. I really like the utility, being able to get a 3/4 creature on the battlefield with flying with a nice evasive ability. Because mono, if there's something mono-white does amazing well, or, you know, there's many things that mono-white does amazingly well, but one of those is equipment. And if you can find ways to move equipment onto this creature, well, all of a sudden you could have a 10-11 flyer or something swinging in to try to do lethal on your opponent. So it's got a bit of a downside on the very top of the text box, especially if you're not playing it first or second turn. But you know, it's got some interesting synergy there. You know, having being able to get a creature with flying out there at any time is pretty nice. You could copy this, I suppose. So, you know, there's lots of things you can do with this. Next card is Citadel Gate. Obviously, this is coming out of Baldur's Gate, so the second Dungeons and Dragons, say, excuse me, the new Commander Legends for 2022. And it's one of the lands where you get to choose two colors on the card. So Citadel Gate enters the battlefield tapped. As Citadel Gate enters the battlefield, choose color other than white, and you can tap to add white or one mana to the chosen color. Obviously, you're not going to run this in mono white, so the utility is only in two or more colored decks. And yeah, I mean, it's a good card to have. It's a kind of build your own guild gate, especially in 3, 4, 5 colored decks. It's nice for that. But in mono white, it's not going to do you anything. So again, just be careful with that one. Next one is Desert of the True. This goes back to Amonkhet, where we got a bunch of deserts. We had a cycling land cycle back in Amonkhet, and this was the white version. So enters battlefield tap to add white, and cycling for one and a white, you discard the card and draw a card. So what's really nice about these cards is the fact that you can sacrifice them from your hand effectively and be able to draw, cash them in later in the game, and it's the speed to draw a card, especially nice and mono white. If you have a little bit of mana left up right on your opponent's end step and you just need to dig one card further in your deck, just nice to have. And then that leads me to Drifting Meadow. Drifting Meadow is a very similar card, which has the exact same abilities there as the True, except for the fact that it's cycling two, and this is two colorless mana. And I feel like Drifting Meadow, it's probably easier to be able to cycle this because of the fact that it costs two generic mana. So you could easily run this in even a five-color deck, honestly, if you really had to. Because, again, Desert of the True requires you to have at least one white mana as part of the cycling cost, whereas Drifting Meadow is both colorless mana. So you'd be running this 3, 4, or 5-color deck, even just a monocolored deck, too. You can run this and guarantees that you don't have to have a white source of mana. You could use your Soul Ring, let's say, to be able to pay for this, which is really nice. And I think it definitely has a lot more flexibility than Desert of the True, although I could definitely see both of these being played in your deck if you just want to be able to get rid of a couple of extra cards, draw a few extra cards later in the game if you haven't played them already. What's nice about Desert of the True, though, was the fact that there was a lot of desert support in Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation. So if you do have any kind of desert synergy, such as Scavenger Ground, if you run Scavenger Ground, run Desert of the True as well, because then you don't have to sacrifice your Scavenger Grounds to be able to exile everyone's graveyard. So if you're really on that game plan, you're playing mono white, Desert of the True will definitely get the nod over that. Otherwise, Drifting Meadow might actually probably be a little better, but you might end up playing both. So again, that's your call. I'm not going to tell you to play one or the other or either of them, but you know, they definitely have their own position. They definitely have their own position in the pantheon of these lands. The next card I'm going to talk about actually has been, well, okay, there's two versions of it. We're going to go to Kamigawa, so we're going to go to 2005, and we're going to see Iganjo Castle. Iganjo Castle is the first legendary land we've run across in this episode today, and it has tapped add a white to your mana pool, but also an activated ability where you pay white and you tap it to prevent the next two damage that will be dealt to target legendary creature this turn. It's really nice to be able to have the ability to provide a bit of a shield for one of your legendary creatures, or, I mean, frankly, it doesn't even have to be your legendary creature. Obviously, a lot of people look at this card and say it's trash. It's kind of difficult to make work, obviously, because two damage is typically not going to be nearly as impactful as, especially the other lands in this cycle, which definitely had more utility on the overall in a wider variety of situations. But, again, two damage might be enough to save your commander from dying in combat. Certain commanders definitely want to make sure that, they don't die. You want to make sure, unless you're playing, I'm really blanking on this, but was it King Darien who wants you to take damage so you can gain soldier tokens? You're probably not going to want to play that in that deck, but if you're worried about combat and you want to make sure your commander doesn't die, this might be interesting. Again, it's an interesting card. We'll say that much. And was actually did get a new version in Iganja's Seat of the Empire in Kamigawa Neon Dynasty earlier this year in 2022. It is also legendary land, tapped out of colorless, but it has the channel ability, which the entire cycle of these had. It says channel, costing 2 and a white, and discard Iganja's Seat of the Empire. It deals 4 damage to a target, attacking, or blocking creature. This ability costs 1 less to activate for each legendary creature you control. This definitely has a lot more utility than the old version. It's really nice to be able to see if you can try to blow up an attacking or blocking creature. This is also CDH playable, very CDH playable, because again, there's no downside to playing this card, and if it's stuck in your hand and you need to kill something, you can kill something, because it's nice to be able to have that 4 damage in your pocket. If you control your commander, this channel ability costs 1 and a white. If you control 2 legendary creatures, you can get this down to 1. You're basically cycling to do 4 damage. That's basically like a red burn spell. And what's nice about that is your opponent can't respond to it. I mean, they can with the deflecting swap, but they can't counter it. That's really important because this card is not ever hitting play. It is being discarded. So just some interesting things to think about. It's a very solid card. About $5 if you want to pick up a copy for yourself. Really nice to have. And like I said, not a whole heck of a lot of downside to playing this card. So definitely take a look at that if you're interested. The next card we're going to get to is one of the modal dual-faced cards that came out in Zendikar Rising back in 2020. And that is Emeria Shattered Skyclave. And as Emeria Shattered Skyclave enters the battlefield, you may pay 3 life. If you don't, it enters the battlefield tapped, and obviously taps out a white. And the other side is Emeria's Call, which costs 4 white. Sorcery, create 2 4/4 white angel warrior creature tokens with flying. Non-angel creatures you control gain indestructible until your next turn. This card is also CDH playable, because again, if you need a land, you can tap this to, if you need a land but you don't need the mana right away, you can put it into play, comes in tapped, no problem. If you need to have an untapped planes, costs you 3 life, again, in CDH especially, that 3 life is probably not going to mean much. He's already playing a whole bunch of shock lands, fetch lands, etc., etc. So the fact you can do that is really nice. But what really pushes this over the top and really makes you excited about this card is the other side, the sorcery, the Emeria's Call side. Because not only is making 2/4/4 angel warrior creature tokens with flying really good, but also making all your non-angel creatures indestructible is really nice. Obviously, there's other ways, much cheaper ways to be able to do that in white, especially for 3 or 4 mana and instant speed. But the fact that this is a land on the other side really pushes it over the top. It makes it really nice is that you have a sorcery if you need it to be able to build your board, make your board indestructible, be able to swing in. But it's also nice to be able to have the land on the other side without taking another spell slot. Being able to tap for white and just being able to shock yourself in or basically lightning bolt yourself in the face to be able to get a white mana in there. So there's a reason why it costs over $3 right now, just because it's a really solid card. And it's not the first, and certainly not the, it's the first, but not the last modal dual-faced card we're going to be seeing in this episode. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. Anyway, keep on moving. We're going to get to potentially the most expensive card on this list currently, and that is Emeria the Sky Ruin. Emeria the Sky Ruin enters the battlefield tapped. It's definitely a favorite of mono-whiteware and a lot of mono-white players. Reads at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 7 or more planes, you may return target creature card, from your graveyard to the battlefield, and you can tap to add white to your mana pool. Obviously, Emeria early in the game is probably not going to do you a whole heck of a lot, because it's basically a planes with extra steps, right? But if you can get this out, even on turn 8, and start returning creatures to the battlefield, you can start returning creatures to the battlefield from your graveyard. That's some really nice value. So, honestly, the sad thing is I think this card's kind of overrated in the fact that it promises a really powerful effect, but you have to wait a while to be able to get this into play. Obviously, if you ramp, you can get the extra planes on the battlefield, that's great. If you can get this out turn 5, it's probably better, and get it online turn 5, that's great. But if you're not quite able to do that, I don't know how useful this card technically is. I do run it in my own mono-white deck, but rarely does it ever go off as intended. I think that this is a card that, despite its price tag for about $15, potentially is the most overrated white land on this list. I don't like saying overrated a lot, but I feel like everyone says it's a slam dunk include any white deck, and I say, eh, no. There's never an auto include. I don't like the word staple. And I don't know. Just the fact that you have to control so many other lands for it to do literally anything other than be a basic plains is weird. And it also because it's a non-basic land. You know, in the in most situations here, unless your game's really going long, this card could easily get sniped off by single target land removal, land destruction, and then you basically got nothing out of it, where basic planes would have done just as well. So I'm sorry, Emeria, but I think that if there is a card that is overrated, it's definitely you. That you just the fact that there's battlefield tapped and requires it has a great upside if you're able to pull off, but if you can't pull the upside off, it's just expensive. It comes untapped. It doesn't really help you out too much in the vast majority of situations. So, sorry, Emeria, but go sit in the corner with your dunce cap on the majority of the time. Now, if your games do run long, this is definitely an MVP. I love casual games. I love Battlecruiser games. If you're able to get this online, best feeling in the world. So, again, it really depends on what your meta is looking like, what you're trying to do, how quickly you can get seven more planes out there besides this. So, again, take my advice with a grain of salt on this one. Obviously, I think it's just the way that I look at the card. But again, it's very valid, very fair for you to disagree with me on that one. And we're going to move on to definitely a favorite of Mono White Borders. That is Flagstones of Trocaire. Flagstones of Trocaire is a legendary land that taps add white, and when it's put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may search your library for a planes card, put it on the battlefield tap, then shuffle your library. This is a very interesting card, because if you have any sort of way to sacrifice a land when this is on the battlefield, all of a sudden you basically get to replace it with a planes. And it just says planes. It doesn't say a basic planes. So again, if you're playing this in a multicolored deck, all of a sudden you could easily do something with this. So yeah, there's a lot of really cool synergies with this one, because you could even get a freaking dual land, one of the OG duels off of this, if you have a way to sacrifice it. So honestly, I think this card has a ton of upside. It's really cool. And if you want to pick up a Time Spiral Remastered copy, it's about $3 right now. So, you know, a little bit on the high side for some of these lands. But on the other hand, if you have a way to make it work, you can sacrifice this land even just for, I don't know. Yeah, if you just have a way to sacrifice a land for any reason, whether that's the constant miss or, you know, literally anything that makes you sacrifice a land, the fact it replaces itself is real nice. You can easily tap this, sacrifice this, get another land. If you have a landfall trigger, that goes on the stack. Unfortunately, that land comes in tapped, which powers it down a little bit, but the fact that it can replace itself is really nice. And I think that this is definitely a card that a lot of people are sleeping on, especially in decks that like to sacrifice things. Obviously, white is not necessarily a color that likes to sacrifice things, at least not most of the time. I do have a deck that loves to sacrifice these sorts of things and then bring lands back. So in those sorts of decks, this is a slam dunk include for me, and I do run that in my sacrifice deck. So again, if you're interested in something like that, definitely look up Flagstones of Trocaire. Jeez, I almost did that again. Oy, definitely not my... You can tell I haven't been doing this for a while, because I guess I really am not thinking quite straight. Anywho, moving on. The next card on this list is Forbidding Watchtower. It's another land that enters the battlefield tapped. Tapped add white to your mana pool, and it's got an activated ability. One and a white, Forbidding Watchtower becomes a 1/5 white soldier creature until end of turn. It's still a land. Just like with Cave of the Frost Dragon, this thing can turn into a creature if you pump enough mana into it. What's nice about this one, though, is the fact it only costs 2 mana versus the 5 mana for Cave of the Frost Dragon. Now, you are getting a 1/5 that has no extra abilities, no evasion, no nothing, just a 1/5 white soldier creature token. But again, there's a reason why Blink Moth Nexus was so good for all those years. And I'm not trying to say that this card is anywhere near as good as Blink Moth or Ink Moth Nexus. What I'm trying to say, though, is the fact that being able to put a little bit of mana into one of these lands and animate it to be able to get an extra attacker, extra blocker, whatever on the battlefield is really nice. It's just that extra little trick up your sleeve that could potentially determine the outcome of a game, or nothing else, just block. What's nice about a 1-5 soldier is if you're getting attacked with a 3-3, well, all of a sudden you can block it with a 1-5, you don't lose your land, and, you know, that just costs you 2 mana. So I really think that these cards should see more play, honestly. Obviously, the fact that it comes untapped is a little bit of a bummer, but honestly, you know, if in the vast majority of situations, I think the upside on these kinds of cards vastly outpaces the negatives. I really like just being able to animate lands, be able to protect yourself, or just get that extra chip damage in through. It's just really nice to be able to have that flexibility. I'm actually going to skip Gate to the Citadel because I told myself when I went into this episode that I had two rules. One, well, actually three rules, I suppose. One, it was only going to be lands that produce white mana only, so no Mana Confluence, no City of Brass, none of those add one mana of any color lands. No, just mono white. Two, it had to be a land that created specifically white mana. Not colorless mana, just white mana. Actually, I think that was the first one. But really, the other thing I really wanted to do is make sure that I'm not using cards that don't appear in paper. I don't play the digital client, and I really don't even know what the Seek mechanic does. So I'm going to skip it because I honestly don't really know what the power of this card is. And yeah, I guess it's not a really fair assumption for me to try to evaluate a card that I guess I don't really understand. So I'm going to keep on moving. I'm also going to skip the non-basic lands that have the storage counters on them, because again, they can't tap for white mana without some sort of extra input. This includes Fountains of Cho, Acacian Store, and a few other lands. I'm just going to skip these because obviously they require extra turns to be able to then get the white mana. And then it feels more like the counters are providing you white mana versus the lands themselves. Kind of more of a filtering thing versus, you know, being able to just tap and get a white mana. So I'm just going to skip those. So the next one on the list is Kabira Crossroads. This is actually something that's in my chaff box. Something I've always kind of wanted to see it work. And it enters the battlefield tapped, obviously, as most of these are. And when it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life. What's really nice about white, these white lands, I think, is the fact that they provide you these fun little enter the battlefield effects that can get around a whole lot of other hate bear things. And gaining even just 2 life, if you really need the 2 life, is nice to have. But especially important if you're running a life gain deck where all of a sudden you can trigger something off of this, because this can't be countered. You know, you're gaining the 2 life, which if you have some sort of payoffs, especially if you're running Abzan, if you're running Orzhov, and you have some kind of life gain synergy, the fact that one of your lands can help you do that is really nice. I know there's a colorless land, again, I'm blanking on the name right now, this happens a lot, but it also does the same thing where it gains you 2 life when it enters the battlefield. What's nice about this is the fact that it actually can tap for white mana. The other one only taps for colorless, so if you're playing especially a mono white or one of these life gain colors, the fact that you can gain 2 life off of land entering the battlefield, that's really nice. So, again, very, very, very niche card, but in the right deck, this can put in some work. Next card is Kabira Plateau. Another one of the modal dual face cards from Zendikar Rising. Enters battlefield tap to add a white. The other side is Kabira Takedown. Instant for 1 white. Reading Kabira Takedown deals damage equal to the number of creatures controlled to target creature or planeswalker. Only 26 cents. It's an uncommon. It's a really nice ability because, one, you can use this as a land, obviously. But the other thing, you can also potentially remove a creature or problematic planeswalker. The fact that this hits planeswalkers is great. Sometimes you may not necessarily be able to get through to a planeswalker, especially one with an absolutely devastating ability on board. Jace the Mind Sculptor obviously comes to mind here. And if you just want to clear, or one of the Teferi cards, if you want to try to clear that off the board, Kabira Takedown, 2 mana, instant speed. If you have several creatures on the board, you can probably kill something. So it's just really nice to have the flexibility. Obviously not perfect, but hey, the fact that it's a land and it provides you an extra land and without taking up another spell slot is really nice. So I just think this card's really solid and it's super cheap. So definitely take a look into that if you're interested. Next card on the list here is Banden Commander, probably for good reason. That's Caracas. Legendary land tapped, add white, tap to return target legendary creature to its owner's hand. Yeah, there's not much to say about this one. It's an expensive card, good card, but not the most fun in Commander to deal with because you can just bounce anyone's Commander anytime you want. It's weird. And it's banned. So I don't have much else to say about that. But as far as the formats it is legal in, really cool, really nice effect. White doesn't have ways to return creatures to their hand. That's typically blue's thing. But the fact that you can return a legendary creature to its owner's hand is really nice. Saves your own thing, bounces an opponent's thing. Still banned in Commander. So I've never played against this. Maybe someday if I was to play a no-ban list, I would play against this. But until that day comes, probably nothing. So going to keep moving on. Cool design, though. Next one is a cycle of cards out of Visions, I believe. And that's Karu. Enters battlefield tapped. When enters battlefield, sacrifice unless you return an untapped planes you control to its owner's hand. Remember, it says untapped. So you can't tap a land and then play this. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And when you tap it, you add one generic colorless mana and a white to your mana pool. Each one of the colors had a land like this. Really nothing overly special, you know, as far as this one over any of the other ones. But again, it's got some really nice art, especially the old Visions version. And yeah, I mean, if you can find a way to be able to get extra lands or whatnot, it's kind of nice. It replaces the land that you had to bounce, but while also giving you a generic mana. So, I don't know. Just seems interesting. Next one is Kildoran Outpost. This one goes back to Alliances. It's on the reserved list, so it's kind of expensive. But it's got a really nice effect. So, if Kildoran Outpost would enter the battlefield, sacrifice a plains instead. Notice that unlike the other one, unlike Karu, this one says sacrifice a planes, not an untapped planes, a planes. Instead, if you do put Kildoran Outpost on the battlefield, if you don't, put it into its owner's graveyard. Tap to add white to your mana pool, or if you pay one and a white and you tap it, put a 1/1 white soldier creature token on the battlefield. Well, I was talking earlier in the episode about how the Castle Ardenvale is really nice because you create soldiers. Well, Kildoran Outpost actually does that better. Now, it does cost you a planes, but the fact that you can tap a planes for mana and then sacrifice to play this means that all of a sudden you have nice extra flexibility. And the fact that you can get that 1/1 soldier cheaper with this card is really nice. So if you're playing a token deck, this is a really nice include. I'm not going to ever say it's a staple because, again, I don't run this, but it's a nice effect to have if you're interested in doing something like that. So definitely look into Kildoran Outpost. It's a bit on the expensive side, but $15 for the original, Alliances version. But the World Champ decks, 1997, are definitely cheaper. So if you're interested in having a gold border version of this card, you can get it for about $6. So that's what I'd do. Next one is, I'm actually going to end up skipping Legion's Landing and Dawn to the First Fourth because it actually enters as an enchantment and you have to actually do some work to be able to get this to flip. So I'm going to just skip that. I'm going to keep moving on to Makindi Mesas. Again, it's another dual-faced card from Zendikar Rising. Why is it so hard to say that today? And entered out battlefield tapped, tapped at white. On the other side, though, Makindi Stampede, sorcery costing 3 white-white, and reads creatures you control get +2/+2 until end of turn. It's nice to have a mono-white overrun effect. Doesn't give you trample, but you know what? If you have a big enough army, +2/+2 is going to be enough. Really nice card. Super cheap. It's only 11 cents. Really nice ability to have, especially in a mono-white deck, especially in a mono-white Flyers deck if you already have evasion or some other form of evasion on your team. Just nice to have the extra +2/+2 for 5 mana. So I'm just going to say that that's a real slam dunk card. If you're looking for something with some flexibility and utility, great card. Next card is Memorial to Glory. Enter battlefield tap, tap to add a white, and you pay 3 and a white and tap and you sacrifice. So you can create 2/1/1 white soldier creature tokens. Again, way to create soldiers, but you lose the land. Cost 5 mana, and frankly, the Kildoran Outpost does a much better job of this. So, but again, in the right deck, it definitely has its place. You get that for 10 cents out of Dominaria, and also they reprinted in Warhammer, in the Warhammer decks. That's interesting. I guess I didn't see that. So, you know, super cheap if you're interested in that sort of effect. Moving on to another card that... Actually, I thought that this was in Dominaria, but I guess it wasn't. That's Nubinalia. It's demonstrating, or it depicts somewhere on Dominaria, but it was not actually done in the second Dominaria set, the one 2018. Interesting. So, enters battlefield tapped, and when enters battlefield, you scry one. Kind of just nice to have that, just like the dual lands, the tap dual lands, scry lands that allow you to do that. So, something for mono white deck, sure, allows you to scry. Not the worst thing. Next one on the list is Nomad Stadium. There was a whole cycle of these from Odyssey, and this one allows you to tap, add white to your mana pool. Nomad Stadium deals one damage to you. Obviously, something they don't really do anymore with these sorts of lands, but. You know, that was just kind of the day and age back in 2001. So what's really nice about this land cycle is the fact it has thresholds. So obviously, if you have 7 more cards in your graveyard, you can activate this. Pay white, tap, and sacrifice it, you gain 4 life. The other cards in the cycle definitely have more powerful abilities. But if you need life, it's nice to have. Next one on this list is another, you know, stop me if you've heard this one before, another modal dual-phased card. That is Undo Sky Ruins. Enter battlefield tapped, add white, but the other side, Undo Inversion, sorcery for 6 white-white, destroy all non-land permanents. Yeah. Destroy all non-land permanents for 8 mana. That's also a land. That's really nice. I can't sugarcoat that. That is really nice. Not gonna lie. Okay, then we have Remote Farm, which comes into play tapped with 2 depletion counters on. You tap and remove depletion counter from it to add 2 white mana to your mana pool. Again, you have ways to proliferate this. It's great. Even if you don't, the fact it can potentially push you over the edge is really nice. So, yeah, just a nice little card to have. Definitely something you can look into playing, even in CDH, honestly. There are definitely some areas where you might be able to find this in fringe lists. So, just nice to have. Next card on the list is Ruins of Trocaire. Comes into play tap to add white to your mana pool, but you can also tap and sacrifice it to add double white to your mana pool. Same thing as with Remote Farm, just nice to be able to have the extra mana, and the fact that you can sacrifice it is also is really nice. To, you know, if you have any sort of sacrifice ability, some sort of trigger going on the stack with that, the fact that you can get 2 white mana out of this is really nice. Now we're going to go to back to Lorwyn with Rustic Clay-chan. Again, I can't pronounce this correctly. I know I'm screwing it up. I know someone out there knows exactly how to pronounce this, so I apologize. I don't know. Anyway, as it enters battlefield, you may reveal a Kithkin card from your hand. If you don't, enters battlefield tapped. Definitely in Morning Tide, it was fine. Probably now, unless you're running a Kithkin deck, you're probably not going to run this. As reinforce, so you can pay 1 to white, discard this card, and put a +1/+1 counter on a target creature. That's nice. It kind of reminds me of Iganjo with the channel ability. Can't be countered. You discard it, put a counter on a creature. Not the worst thing. I love cards that allow you to do silly things like this, especially if they're a dead draw in your hand. You can at least you can cash them in for something. So it's never a dead draw, even if it doesn't really do much, even if it's only 1 +1/+1 counter. Sometimes that might make a difference. And the fact that you really can't have it countered is really nice. So, yeah, 23-cent card, definitely take a look into it. Next card is Sandstone Bridge. It's battlefield tapped. When it enters battlefield, target creature gets +1/+1, gains vigilance until end of turn. Tap to add white to your mana pool. Coming out of battle for Zendikar... Yeah, I really love, again, just like with the last card I mentioned, I love the fact that when this hits the battlefield, you can give a target creature +1/+1 and vigilance until end of turn. It's like a combat trick on a land. Yes, the land comes in tap, but it is a combat trick on a land. And it grants vigilance, which is criminally underrated as a mechanic in EDH. Yes, it's still until end of turn, but frankly... just a lot of really nice value right there. I think that this is one of those cards, even though it's only 6 cents, in the right build can be awesome. Nice little combat buff. Nice, not evasive, but a solid ability. And the fact you can tap to add white later on just makes for a really nice utility land. Next one up is Secluded Step. Enters the battlefield tap, tap to add white, and you can cycle for a single white to draw a card. Again, I talked earlier about the other cards that can be cycled. This one costs one less, does the same exact thing. If you want to run one of them, probably run this one because it costs one mana less and you get that card anyway. So, yeah, Secluded Step's nice. I do run this in quite a few of my decks because if I need it as a land, I can play it, put it into play tapped. If I need to cash in for another card, one mana, bam, it's out of my hand, draw a card. Not much else to say about that. We've got a few more cards left here on the list. Next one is Sajiri Shelter, which on the other side is Sajiri Glacier. Same as all the other modal double-faced cards, but on the other side, target creature it controls gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn, one of a white instant. I love protection spells. Even though it's a very confusing mechanic, I just love these sorts of things. Helps protect your creatures from removal, helps them from being killed in combat, etc., etc. Helps your attacker get through without being blocked. I love these kind of things. And the fact that it has a land on the other side, chef's kiss. It is a dollar, so I mean, this is a very powerful card. People know that. That's why it's a dollar for an uncommon, whereas the other ones are 20 cents, let's say, or less. But it is a very valuable card, protects your stuff, can be used in a land in a pinch. Great card. And that's actually a takeoff on the Worldwake, or a card that was released in Worldwake, Sajiri Step, which when it enters the battlefield, target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. Wait a minute. That's really good. The fact that now your land provides the exact same ability as the other modal dual face card as your Sajiri Shelter is amazing. You get a land that provides protection for a target creature you control until the end of your turn. Obviously, you can't use this in response to a removal spell, but it's very hard to interact with because it is a land. You have to play it on your turn, you have to play it early, but how many other lands give your creatures protection? How many other lands have this much value stapled onto them? I really love this card. I guess I must have missed this, but this is a really sick card. This is one of those cards that really says, hey, this is why I really love these white-producing non-basic lands. Because they do really cool stuff like this. They give you protection, they give you awesome abilities. Yeah. But wow, I gotta see if I can get a couple of copies of this because I definitely have a few decks that would love this ability. So, yeah, I just think that that's probably the underrated card from this list, honestly. So, Sajiri Step, 17 cents for the Worldwake copy, 20 cents for the dual deck copy. Next one's gonna be one that you're probably not gonna pick up unless you really want to, and that is Serra Sanctum. Serra Sanctum is a cycle of legendary lands from the Urza Saga. Obviously, not a complete, a very busted set in its own way. And you can tap to add white to your mana pool for each enchantment you control. Very solid. If you're running an enchantment deck, this is amazing. Even if you just run a couple enchantments here and there, the fact that you can get two, three, four white mana just by tapping this, it's great. There's a reason why it's almost $300 right now. There's a reason why a ton of people want this. Because it's that good. So, yeah, Serra Sanctum, not much to say on that. There's a lot of other content creators who have said a whole lot more about this land. I'm not going to really do that. So, it's just a great land if you have $300. Or, again, if you want to proxy it, you can have access to it anytime. Next card here is, I don't know if I really want to talk about this one, but I'll do it anyway. Shefet Dunes, card out of Hour of Devastation, taps to add colorless to your mana pool, but you can tap it and pay one life to add white to your mana pool. Obviously, if you want to have a way to be able to pay life, it's kind of nice. You know, there are a few cards like Font of Agonies, which want you to pay life. So it is nice to be able to have a way to hurt yourself, I guess, on the land. Also, if you really need the white mana, it's really nice to be able to have that ability. But it's again, it's a desert, so it has an interesting desert synergy. So you pay two white, tap and sacrifice a desert, again, a desert, not just this one. Creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. Very expensive way to give your creatures a buff, but again, in the right kind of deck, it's really nice. could push your creatures through to help you win the game, could help your creature survive, could help kill an opposing attacking creature. I don't know. I mean, yes, it's very expensive for 5 mana, but on the other hand, I kind of like looking at these cards with a glass-half-full mentality instead of a glass-half-empty mentality. I just really like the fact that, you know, in the right situation, they can do something instead of just sitting there. So, you know, it works out. Next card is Skyclave Basilica. Enter the battlefield tapped. Tapped add white. And on the other side is Skyclave Cleric, which is a 1-3 core cleric. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life. Again, a dual face card. Now, what I should say about this one, give you 1-3 for 2, gains you 2 life. Not bad. On uncommon for 7 cents. If you just need a body, you just need a land, it's nice to have in there. I'm going to skip Thriving Heath because it only taps for white or 1 mana of your chosen colors, so I'm going to skip that. Vivid Meadow, same thing, enters the battlefield with 2 charge counters. I can tap to add white or remove a charge counter and tap it to add 1 mana of any color. Again, you're not going to run this in a mono white deck, so you're not going to worry about that too much. And the last card we're going to talk about here in this section is Windbrisk Heights. It's in the Hideaway lands that came out in Lorwyn. Has Hideaway 4. So when this land enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library, exile 1 face down, then put the rest on the bottom in a random order. Enters battlefield tapped, tapped add white. And then you can pay a white and tap it, and you may play the exiled card without paying its mana cost if you attack the 3 or more creatures this turn. Really nice ability, especially in a token deck, if you're going to go wide strategy, and you have something amazing underneath there. These Hideaway lands are great. They provide you a lot of value, especially if you're able to hit something in your top 4. And even if they don't, if you can at least get some sort of spell out there by attacking with 3 or more creatures, you get some sort of value without having to really pay for too much. Because you've only put in 2 mana. You have something on there that's 4 or 5 mana. Well, bam, you save multiple mana doing what you were going to already do anyway. So, really nice ability. Very cheap to pick up if you're interested in doing something like that. And yeah, that was my really quick rundown of all the lands that produce white mana specifically. Obviously, I have some very interesting opinions on some of these cards. You don't have to agree with them. I understand that. But if you're interested in finding out some of these cards that you have never really heard of, I would definitely take a look at, especially the modal dual face cards, but also Sajiri's Step. I really think that these cards have a lot of utility on them. A lot of people have seen the utility in them. But if you haven't really seen the power of mono white, I suggest you take a look at some of these, because you have some really nice abilities, whether that's protection or pumping out soldier tokens or even just giving you a nice little ability to, you know, like Flagstones of Trocare giving you an extra land when it's sacrificed, or Igonjo Seed the Empire able to kill an attacking creature, Ancient Den being able to give you some extra artifact affinity, or just even the Cave of the Frost Dragon, which can turn into a 3-4 dragon with flying. I really think that these white-producing lands are criminally underrated, and I think it's time that that distinction goes away. These cards are solid. You should definitely look into playing them, if you're playing mono-white especially. And yeah, I just really like where these cards are going. And yeah, definitely look into some of these if you're interested in boosting a mono-white deck or building a mono-white deck. It doesn't really matter. Just take a look into these cards. You never know what you might find that you might enjoy. And here we've reached the end of the episode. I'd like to give another huge shout-out again to the people who support me over at patreon.com/mtgandquarantine. So another huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgandquarantine for more information. You can find me on Twitter over at MTGInQuarantine, and you can find this podcast anywhere any major podcast outlets, as your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player, FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, MTG Cast, a million others. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, you probably can find me right there. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Sorry about such a long break, but I really needed it, so it's good to be back. And yeah, you've been listening to the MTGInQuarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.